This is Radio Equal Shot with your host, Alex Smith.
Welcome back to a Radio EcoShock special on the Great Fires of California in November 2018. After his career at the EPA, meteorologist Jason Salmonell leads the Capital Weather Gang at the Washington Post. He is one of the most influential climate-aware weather journalists, in my opinion, in the United States. Jason, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks so much for having me.
Do you think the recent fires in California will be seen as a turning point for the state or for the country?
I hope so. And, you know, I hope that, you know, all of these extreme weather events that we're having or extreme natural disasters, which have climate change linkages, are a wake-up call so that our nation will take climate change more seriously and think about how we can manage the risks and respond appropriately.
Can you give us an example of how climate change could be involved?
Absolutely. So, you know, in the case of the California fires, both the Woolsey fire and, of course, the Camp fire, which has been so devastating, they were both spurred by unusually warm and unusually dry conditions in California. This has been one of the driest falls on record in California, and the last 5 years in California have been the five warmest years on record. And so when you have these tinderbox conditions, when the vegetation is dried out, it just sets the stage for wildfire disasters, because when you have strong winds, you know, coming down these mountain slopes, raging at 50, 60 miles per hour, if you get a spark and the conditions are so hot and so dry, it's just an explosive situation for these fires to consume thousands of acres in a matter of hours.
Yeah, I was listening to a talk by Park Williams. He's a bioclimatologist at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, and he says plants are releasing water faster in a warming world, and that must contribute to how dry those plants are.
Yeah, absolutely. What happens is that when you warm up the atmosphere, it increases something called evapotranspiration. So basically, the water which is stored in plants goes from the plants back into the atmosphere, and so the plants dry out, and they basically become kindling. They become fuel for these fires, and the fires just eat this stuff up and burn very rapidly when you have so much dry vegetation.
So those Santa Ana winds can whip wildfires into fire storms. Can you explain how those work?
Sure. So typically what happens is when you have an area of high pressure set up around Utah, Nevada, the clockwise winds flow around high pressure. And so when you get these winds coming from the east toward the west over these north to south oriented mountain ranges in California, the air is forced down the mountain slopes. And when the air comes down the mountain slopes, it accelerates and it also dries out the air. So what happens is relative humidities drop precipitously. So you get these relative humidity values in the single percentages, you know, 8-10%, so that the air becomes very dry. You've got this hot wind coming down. So if you have any sort of fire igniting under those circumstances, it becomes an explosive situation. And that's what we saw with the Camp fire, where, you know, things developed so quickly. Emergency managers, they couldn't do anything. All they could do was try to protect people. They couldn't even worry about battling the fires. They just had to try to move people out of the way. And in some cases, because of the gridlock on the roads, people couldn't get out of the way because the fire was moving so fast, and that contributed to the loss of life.
And as you reported in the Washington Post in 2017, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced a record 129 million trees died as a result of the drought in California. Do scientists think that's a one-time loss, or is it part of a longer pattern under climate change?
Well, what we've seen is we have seen a trend towards drier conditions in California, especially during the fall. There's a lot of variability in precipitation year to year. And so, you know, and drought's part of the historical record in California. They get drought. They've seen droughts on and off for decades. But what we're concerned about is that precipitation is becoming a little bit more extreme. In other words, when you get droughts, they're tending to last longer, become a little bit more intense. And then on the flip side, when we have heavy precipitation events, when those cycle through, those tend to be heavier as well. So we're seeing a trend towards more extremes. And that's consistent with a warming climate, because when it's warmer, it speeds up evaporation. So when you're in a dry situation, the land surface dries out faster. But when you're When you have storms coming in, there's more water vapor in the atmosphere for the storms to draw from, and so you get heavier rainfall.
Yeah, Daniel Swain said that if the atmospheric river that often hits California in November had come just a couple of weeks earlier, we might not have seen these terrible fires.
That's exactly right, and atmospheric rivers are one of the primary sources for wintertime precipitation in California, and they're instrumental in terms of the rainfall that California needs for its water supply. If and when they get delayed, that can have important consequences for drought, for wildfires, and if we're seeing trends toward drier falls in these atmospheric rivers, these storms that hit the West Coast come later, that extends the wildfire season. And in fact, Swain has documented that the wildfire season's starting earlier and ending later. So we're basically expanding the duration of the wildfire season. So it's almost year-round now. We've seen wildfires blowing up almost every month of the year.
Have we seen, Jason, a switch towards El Nino, and is that a factor?
Yeah, I mean, that could potentially be some good news. So whenever you have El Nino, it does, on average, and not every case is the same, but on average, it does tend to increase precipitation in California, and we saw that a couple of years ago. So hopefully, El Nino will materialize, and that will bring more rainfall this winter, so things won't be quite as dry when the next dry season comes along next summer, and we won't see a repeat of these devastating fires. So we've got to hope that the rain delivers this winter and that El Nino does what it does on average. But again, every El Nino event is different. Some deliver more, some deliver less.
And as a meteorologist, you help build that bridge between weather reporting and climate change. Do you think we're getting to the point where global warming is destabilizing the weather?
Yes, I think it's part and parcel of what we're seeing with the weather right now. If you warm up the atmosphere due to climate change, it affects weather events. And so you see more extremes in heat, you see less extremes in cold, you increase the intensity of precipitation. And so we're seeing that in the statistics now, too, in terms of the number of record highs we're setting, many more record highs than record lows. We're seeing the percentage of the heaviest precipitation events increase. So I think you have to connect the dots, and you're also seeing it with hurricanes too in terms of the amount of rainfall they're generating. If we look at like Hurricane Harvey, for example, or Hurricane Florence, those produced record amounts of rain, and there have been attribution studies which have looked back at those events and found that due to climate change, the rainfall from those events increased substantially, as much as 30-40% in some cases. So yeah, I think you absolutely have to look at the weather in a climate context, because we're not dealing with a stable climate. We're dealing with a climate that's changing, and so that necessarily will affect weather statistics and the intensity of weather events, and you can't divorce the two. They're connected.
Something that puzzles me is, why do you and Chris Mooney and the other staff at the Washington Post get to report fully on climate change when the rest of the media sees it as a side story or just doesn't talk about it at all?
You know, I think it depends on the media organization you're talking about. What we do at the Post, and I think what most responsible journalists do, is they try to mirror the findings of the scientific community. And so because the scientific community has found that climate change is affecting the weather, we report on it. And I think there are, the Associated Press, Seth Borenstein does a great job connecting the dots there and reporting on weather and climate and the connections. And the New York Times has a very formidable climate desk and a team of journalists there that do great work. You've got people at Mashable, at Vox, at Grist, at Slate. I mean, these are all fairly prominent news organizations, some which are more digital, some which are more historical print organizations, which are covering climate, I think, in a robust way. On the other hand, yeah, I mean, there are certainly the opportunities that are missed. Some television networks don't connect the dots as much as maybe is warranted, and so there's definitely room for improvement there. I don't disagree with that.
We have stolen a few minutes from one of America's busiest weather desks. Jason Salmanow is the weather editor for The Washington Post. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us, Jason.
You bet. I enjoyed it.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.